My name is Elin Skar. I'm a political scientist by training and a senior researcher at the Christian Michelsen's Institute in Bergen, Norway. This is a development research institution, and I have been doing research on the Global South mainly. I'm a Latin American specialist, and I have worked on issues like human rights, democratization, the reform of courts, women judges, and particularly on transitional justice for almost 30 years now. And I have worked on truth commissions since I did my master's fieldwork back in 1993 in Chile and Argentina.
So I wanted to ask if you could very briefly explain the background of the Norwegian Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So as we know, the commission is to investigate the Norwegianization policy and injustices against the Sami, Kvenn, and Norwegian Finnish peoples. And could you explain who are the Sami, Kvenn, and Norwegian Finns, and what was the Norwegianization policy?
The Sami are the indigenous people of not only Norway, but also Sweden, Finland, and Russia. They are a cross-border people in the northern parts of these four countries called the Nordkalotten in Norwegian, but also called the Sami, Sápmi, the Sami area. They have been there since, I don't know how long, you know, we had an ice age many, many, many years ago, but time immemorial, as they say in Norway. And they gained the status as indigenous people after the ILO convention in, what was it, 1989. They are actually the only indigenous people in Europe. And the Kvenn are also, they have status as a minority group in Norway, and they are also a cross-border people living in Norway and Sweden. And the story goes that they are settlers that originally came from Finland and migrated across the borders, first into Sweden and then into Norway. But there are controversies as to who was there first. There are parts of Kvenn people who actually claim indigenous status at the moment. But there are close relationships between these two main groups. The Kvenn are also sometimes called Norwegian Finns, settlers who originally came from Finland. The languages are very close, so people sometimes say that the Kvenn language and the Norwegian Finn language is like Norwegian and so-called Old Norwegian. So different dialects, but they're interchangeably understandable. There are also quite close linguistic ties between the Sami and the Kvenn languages. And the Norwegian Finns, they are a tiny, no, the sorry, the Forest Finns are a tiny group of people who live much further south in the country, close to the border with Sweden. And the Forest Finns are, it's a minority group that has a status as a minority group, but that people know very little about, actually. And apparently the language is extinct. They say that only a handful of people can still speak the language of the Forest Finns.
Then the Kvenn and the Norwegian Finns, those names are interchangeable, and the Forest Finns are a different group, is that correct?
Yes, Forest Finns are a different group. The Kvenns and the Norwegian Finns have very close ties. But they have separate organizations, they organize differently, they have different approaches to how important language is. So the Truth Commission actually denotes them with a slash. So they say Kvenn / Norwegian Finns. And this is also what the Norwegian government does. So they don't say Kvenn and Norwegian Finns, but Kvenn / Norwegian Finns. And some Norwegian Finns are upset about this because they want to be called denominated like a separate group. And they have different linguistic status.
Okay, thank you. And yeah now if you could explain what the Norwegianization policy was.
The Norwegianization policy was a state policy that was introduced by the Norwegian state around 1850. I think the law came in 1851, to be specific. And this was part of a nation-building process whereby the state wanted to integrate the indigenous people, the Sami, and also the minority groups of Norway, so the Kvens, the Norwegian Finns, and the Forest Finns, into Norwegian mainstream society. And one of the main ways of making people mainstream Norwegians was to force them to learn the Norwegian language. Now, I think I need to point out that Norway is a very long and extensive country. Geographically, it's huge. And many of the Sami and the Kven live in the northernmost part of the countries, where the population is very sparse, geographical distances are huge. And at that point in time, the 1850s, schooling was only for the privileged few. So the idea was to introduce the Norwegian language to these minority groups and our indigenous people. So a schooling system was gradually put into place. They also, of course, wanted to preach the Bible and the Christian gospel to these people. And one way of doing that was to make children go to school. So into the 1900s, so-called residential schools were gradually introduced. The closer you got to the Second World War, which started in 1940 in Norway, the more residential schools were built in the northern part of Norway. I forgot to mention that the Sami people are originally nomadic people, reindeer herders, or part of the Sami are reindeer herders, and of course they would move around with their reindeer. So the Norwegian state created residential schools so that the Sami people could send their children to school while they moved around with the reindeer, and they were taught only weeks every year. The children were taken away from their parents, sent to school in primary, so from the year of 8 to 10, and forced to be away from the parents for a long period of time. And in these schools, they were only allowed to speak Norwegian, not Sami and not Kven. A lot of times the schools were mixed because the Sami and the Kven lived in the same areas. And frequently there was intermarriage between these groups so that a child would be both Sami and Kven. But regardless of whether they spoke Kven, Sami, or Norwegian or Finnish, they would actually be forced to learn Norwegian in school. So language was one thing. Preaching the Christian gospel was a second. And a third motivation of the Norwegian state was actually benevolent, in the sense that many Sami and Kven were really poor people. I mean, most of Norway was really poor in the 1850s, but people living in the north of Norway were particularly poor. There was widespread poverty, there was hunger, hygienic conditions were terrible. So part of the idea of the state was to sort of lift these people into poverty, into modernity, into mainstream population, give them better opportunities in terms of work. And there was also, I spoke about the schools, but another incentive of learning Norwegian was that property rights became tied to knowing Norwegian at some point. So those Kven and Sami who were not nomadic, but who actually either were fishermen or farmers, they could only own land if they knew Norwegian and signed their papers in Norwegian. So that was another motivation for teaching people Norwegian and, you know, converting people, trying to get them away from their regular way of traditional life and become more Norwegian. So this assimilation policy of the Norwegian state was not a peculiar only to Norway. And I think I want to mention this because, like I said, the Sami and the Kven are cross-border people. And the same kind of policy or very similar kinds of policies were also enforced in Sweden and in Finland. So you had Swedification of the Sami in Sweden and you had Finnish of the Sami in Finland. And the aim was the same: to strip people of their language and culture and traditional ways of life and thinking and make them part of the nation. Let us not forget that the era from the 1850s onwards was part of a wider nation-building movement in all of Europe. It wasn't only in the Nordic countries. So I think we need to see these policies of assimilation in a much larger and broader context. And I think I also want to mention that, unlike Unlike the residential schools in Canada, for instance, that we've heard a lot about in later years with the Canadian Truth and Reconciliation Commission, there was actually a benevolent streak in the Norwegian or the Nordic countries' policies, and that was gradually to bring people into society and make them part of the welfare state. Because another point of this policy, when you got further into the 1900s, was also to give people or children access not only to schooling, but also to health. So that was another big thing, you know, to lift people out of poverty and give them access to health.
Okay. And when did these policies go into?
Formally into the 1950s in Norway. And the last residential school, I think, was closed as, you know, I may be wrong on this, but I think it was open as long as 1996, but that will have to be checked. It went on for way after the former policy actually ended. But the thing that the Norwegian Truth Commission is concerned about is that although these policies were formally abolished by the state, there are many lingering consequences of this policy, and this is what the Truth Commission is actually investigating.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and I have a question on that in just a bit that I want to ask you. But as you have written, the Sami population are fairly politically empowered today. Quoting from your article, yes. The popularly elected Sami parliament has a consultation agreement with the Norwegian government. Legislation comprising Sami rights in different fields has been adopted, and the king has offered apology to the Sami for past policies. The Kven, Norwegian Finns, also now have status as national minorities. So why was a truth commission established now, so long after the abuses officially ended?
That is a very good question, and that was actually the exact question that motivated the research that I'm doing now and writing a proposal on the Norwegian Truth Commission, because I was really puzzled to find out that we had a truth commission in my own country. I had been working on truth commissions in Latin America and in Africa for many years, and normally truth commissions are set up after violent conflict. So after internal armed conflict, after military dictatorships, after apartheid regimes, after one-party regimes with heavy repression to investigate, you know, broad and systematic gross human rights violations. So this was my concept and idea of a truth commission. And all of a sudden we have it in Norway. And I think we need to see the occurrence of these new commissions, not only in Norway in 2018, but also followed by similar commissions in Sweden and Finland established only a year ago. So there has been a movement in these Nordic countries, not only in Norway, but also in Sweden and Finland, pushed by the Sami community for a truth commission. And I think we need to see this in a broader sort of global context, where there has been a big focus on transitional justice over the last years. We've seen an outburst of truth commissions across the world. So this was like an institution that people knew about, also in the Sami communities. And there has been a huge international global focus on indigenous rights, departing from the 80s and onwards. So I think this rights consciousness thing has grown in the Sami communities very, very gradually. And the concrete proposal for a truth commission in Norway was made by a legal scholar, actually, and a Sami politician who was head of a very small opposition, Sami political opposition party called Arja, Laila Susanne Vars. She had been involved in the UN, and she was writing a thesis, and she traveled to Canada. She had a meeting with one of the Canadian commissioners, a little child, and she was greatly inspired by this man, and she learned much more about what the Canadian Truth Commission had done in Canada, where the focus was on residential schools and all the harms that were caused to Indigenous children in Canada. And she saw the parallel to residential schools in Norway, and her initial proposal was that a truth commission be established in Norway to look into this residential school policy in Norway and the loss of language among the Sami population. So it was a very, very narrow proposal to start off with. She benched this in the Sami parliament, where she was heading this political party. And she told me in an interview that she wasn't really met with a lot of enthusiasm initially. The Sami parliament was rather cool. Like she said, they didn't say anything. And I have come to learn over these last few years of research that when Sami people don't say anything, it's not that they don't know what to say. It's because they disagree. And the more silence, the more disagreement. So she was met with silence, and then gradually she talked to the Council of Elders in the Sami Parliament, and gradually she got people on board. And in the end, you know, after a lot of negotiations and politicking, the Sami Parliament officially requested the establishment of a truth commission from the Norwegian government. And the initial answer from one of the ministers when the proposal was floored was that, you know, this wasn't going to happen. And in the back room, the discussions were that if the Sami were given a truth commission, the Kvene would also demand a truth commission. So this minister said no. This was the message sent to the Norwegian Sami parliament. And of course, people were upset. And then two left-wing politicians in the national parliament, Stortinget, got involved. And they were really, really tired of what Fylkesnes, one of these parliamentarians, said that this was just another sign of arrogance from the Norwegian parliament to sort of just dismiss this proposal of a truth commission. So he took it on to push for this, and he allied himself with Kirsti Bergstø, who is another left-wing parliamentarian. Both of these two people are from the north of Norway, so they have a strong constituency in the north where the Sami and the Kven live. They started a series of negotiations, and eventually another proposal was floored, not only by the Sami parliament this time, but also the Kven were part of this, and the Norwegian Finns became part of the new proposal, formal proposal, that was floored in 2017. To the Norwegian parliament. And eventually, you know, after a lot of negotiations, the Labour Party, Martin Kolberg, held an open hearing in the parliament, and he invited a lot of the interest organizations among the Sami, the Kven, and the Norwegian Finns, and the Forest Finns at that point. And some of the stories, they say that some of the stories that were given in this room in the Norwegian parliament were very moving. And you know, they talked about the assimilation policy, basically, and the consequences that this had physically and culturally on the Sami and the Kven and the Norwegian Finn people. And this moved the audience to the point where they actually managed to secure a majority vote for the establishment of the Truth Commission. But it was just only half of the votes, which means that the Norwegian parliament was actually quite split over whether a truth commission should be established or not. And from the initial proposal that was made by VARS, which was a narrow focus on residential schools and the consequences for Sami children and language and culture, it had grown to include not only the Sami, but the Kven, the Norwegian Finns, the Forest Finns, and a much, much broader mandate.
Thank you. That's a really helpful history of how the commission came about. And that was a question I had also wanted to ask you. So I really appreciate that explanation. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to ask you, are there examples of how the Sami and Kven populations are still impacted today by the legacy of these policies?
Yes, the loss of language is maybe the biggest issue. The Sami have managed to keep the language in the areas where a lot of Sami live, which is main reindeer herding areas. So the northern Sami, the majority of the Sami have kept their language, whereas the Kven has, there are hardly any people who speak Kven and only a handful who speak Forest Finn. So loss of language, definitely.
I understand that one aspect the commission is investigating is how the effects of the Norwegianization policy have affected the majority Norwegian population's view of Sami and Kven Norwegian Finns. Could you explain this a bit?
Yeah, I think lack of knowledge is probably the greatest problem, because there hasn't been much in the education system about Sami Kven, Norwegian Finns, or Forest Finns. So I think ignorance among the majority of the population of the assimilation policy is the biggest problem. A second problem is stereotypes, lingering stereotypes of Sami, particularly Sami, but also Kven. So recent reports show that racism is still quite rampant and more directed against the Sami than against the Kven. So that's a second problem. A third problem is that health investigations show that Sami people have, you know, poorer health basically than the majority population, and suicide rates are also higher among Sami than among the majority, particularly among young men.
Do they know why it's particularly among young men? Is there any research on that?
No, not enough research. Alcoholism, depressions. I mean, there are several theories, but this hasn't been investigated thoroughly enough. But they do have, they have had particular investigations into health in the populations, not only the Sami, but the populations who live in the northernmost counties. And they're starting the third survey now in the fall after the summer holidays, and they want to broaden the base of participants to look into the differences between these different groups.
Okay.
So there is ongoing research on this at the moment.
Okay. And what is your role on the team investigating the work of the commission? What are you looking at specifically?
Well, I actually designed the project, and we are working, we're a group of six researchers working on this with different backgrounds. I think four of us are political scientists. There is one folklorist, and there is one anthropologist. And we have worked on slightly different issues. I'm a political scientist by training, and I think my strength is in the comparative aspect. So I have been trying to look into how the Norwegian Commission differs from or is similar to commissions in other countries. So we have been following the Commission as a team. We have been following the Commission through its three phases. We have looked at the background for the Commission, and we have followed the process of the commission as it has been working. And we will also look at the report and its findings when the final report is handed over to the Norwegian Parliament on the 1st of June this year.
Okay. Have you heard or read any of the testimonies?
No, these are secret. The testimonies given to the Truth Commission have been given in, you know, under what you call it, secrecy. But some of the people who have given testimony to the Truth Commission have also published the testimonies in newspapers or on radio. So some of them have been made public with consent of the people giving, the person giving testimony. They have collected about 750 stories from different people all over the country. And these stories will be analyzed by the commission and archived. So with permission, you know, a lot of it will be anonymized, but some people have given consent to the stories being used by researchers and others later, after the commission finishes its report. So I haven't, you know, but I've talked to a lot of people, and some of them, of course, have suffered from assimilation and, you know, the consequences of Norwegianization. So but I haven't spoken to victims as such. I have spoken to people who are part of this.
Hmm.
But okay. I haven't collected testimonies, no.
Yeah, okay. Were there any, you mentioned that some of the testimonies had been published in media with people's consent. Were there any examples that you remember that stood out?
Well, I think most of them, and also testimonies that have been given at the open hearings. I forgot to mention that. The Truth Commission held open hearings in, I think, about 40 meetings spread all over the country, but mainly in the north and in the areas where most Sami and Kven live. And at these meetings, they also asked people to tell their stories. So that was another part of the testimonies that were public. And I did participate in several of these meetings. So I've listened to the stories that have been given in public, as well as read some in the newspapers. And I think mainly the stories are about the residential schools, how they were forced to learn Norwegian when they were children, how they were taken away from their parents, and this another word that has been repeated over and over again in these public meetings is the word shame. You know, how people have felt shame growing up and being afraid of using their language. And the younger generations will say that when they grew up, they heard people speaking, you know, either Sami, Kven or Norwegian Finn, that they didn't understand. Their grandparents or their parents would speak this language to hide things from their kids. Or, you know, it was like a secret language that children didn't have access to. Because the people who, you know, who lost the language, let's put it this way, the grandparents' generation of young children today will still know Sami and Kven. It was they who didn't pass the languages on to their children. So that the second generation now, those who are young today, they are now the ones who want to revive the language. And they can't go to their parents because their parents don't know how to speak Sami or Kven. They have to go to their grandparents. So there is like a generation that has really lost their language. And they are bitter. To come back to your question, they are the ones who are bitter because they really did not grow up learning the language of their parents. And this has been like it's been like a sore point because in many families, they didn't want to speak about it. So a lot of another thing that people have said in these meetings is that they grew up not knowing that they were Sami or Kven. So not only was their language taken away, their identity, their sort of family history was kept hidden to them. And they feel that they have kind of lost out on an important part of their culture and their roots. And this now there is a big movement, revival movement, both among the Sami and the Kven, trying to access this ancestry and the traditions and the joik, the singing, the traditional singing of the Sami, and, you know, traditional ways of dressing. The kofta has become extremely popular again among young people, young Sami in particular, but also among Kven. So there is a revival of trying to take back again what was taken away. And this has been like a recurrent theme in many of these stories.
You've mentioned the Canadian example a few times, and of course there's a lot of parallels with the residential schools. In Canada, we know there were gross abuses inside the schools, physical abuse, sexual abuse, many deaths of children. Are there similar examples in this context, or is that not part of the history here?
That is hard to know. I think this is one of the things that the commission might know more about. It has not been an issue in any of the public meetings that I've attended. And I personally do not think that the violence was of the same kind of gross character as it was in Canada. I really don't believe that. But that having been said, we know that physical abuse, you know, physical punishment was used in the residential schools. So if somebody said a Sami word or spoke Kven, they would be smacked or hit over the hands or, you know, sent to a different room. But physical punishment was a part of schooling in the 1850s and early 1900s in all parts of the country. The difference was that punishment was given because people spoke a particular language, right? So that's the main difference. In terms of sexual abuse, I haven't heard any stories of that. It may have existed, but not as part of a structured state policy. And unlike Canada, the church was not involved in the residential schools. So these were state-run schools, secular state-run schools.
Okay, I see. And you mentioned that the report will be delivered to Parliament on June 1st. Yes. Do you know what any of the recommendations will be, or do you have any guesses of what they may be?
That's a hard one. I know that there was a public hearing in Oslo 2 or 3 weeks ago in early March, where all the interest organizations, there was a broad invitation to Sami, Kvin, Norwegian Finn, and Forest Finn communities that they could attend this meeting and come with recommendations for reconciliation and follow-up measures. And some of these, and they were also invited to write these recommendations down and send them to the commission. So they do have a long list of concrete recommendations from various organizations. And I attended this meeting, the public hearing in Oslo, and there were all kinds of recommendations, like improve schooling for Sami children, make Sami language training accessible all over the country, strengthen kindergartens for Sami people, set up a museum for the Forest Finns. There was a broad list: education at the higher level, better health, better access to health, more measures to counter racism. So a whole bunch of different kinds of proposals, really, from the very specific to the very sort of broad.
And the last thing I wanted to ask you, again, we're, you know, making connections to the United States in this program. I'm wondering if you think there are lessons that the U.S. could take from Norway's example with this commission. I think one of the major points that's discussed a lot when we look at why there hasn't been a national process in the U.S. is that the public doesn't really see the connections between racial injustice today and the history of slavery and Jim Crow and these types of policies that were perpetrated. So I'm wondering if you think that there are lessons that the U.S. could take from the Norwegian example.
I think teaching the majority population about systematic structural repression is maybe a key issue. I do believe that, at least in my country, Norway, the majority population has been happily ignorant about what the state has done towards indigenous people and minority groups in this country. And I will not be surprised if there are similarities in the United States, whereby, historically speaking, statal repression has been carried out as a matter of policy against several groups in the country. And they're not minority groups in the sense that the Sami are minority groups in Norway. When you think about the black population in the US, I mean, it's a huge part of the population. And the way racism, you know, slavery and systematic racism was implemented in the United States way into the 1950s, is something that people may be aware of just vaguely, but they don't necessarily know about the gruesome, horrendous, you know, treatment of people. From people were put on slave ships until they arrived in the U.S., how the slave trade and slavery was actually implemented, you know, forceful pregnancies, beatings, floggings, torture. I'm sure that a lot of the, you know, a large portion of the UN population is probably not aware of this. Slavery used for building railroads, abuse, you know, teenage pregnancies in the United States. I think there are lots of, you know, poverty, incarceration, racism. I think there are many things in the United States that you see, you know, as part of society today that may be traced. It's hard to prove these causal relationships. But when you look at development of history over time, you can see that there are foundations that were laid 100 or 200 or 300 years ago that we haven't gotten rid of yet, because there are ways of thinking and ways of behavior that are passed on from generation to generation. They become stereotypes, they become ways of behaving, which results in, for instance, ongoing racism today. I mean, the racial policies against the Sami in the 1850s were based on principles or thoughts of inferiority, you know? They used, I mean, scientists at this point did research on Sami skulls to prove that they were inferior in ways of intelligence. And we've seen this all over the world, that some races have been thought of as inferior. And, you know, the United States is probably one of many countries that needs to take a kind of, you know, look into its history, examine it critically, and come with some policies that will improve equality in society.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's everything that I wanted to ask you. Is there anything I've missed or anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think I've talked a lot. So if you have anything else that you want to ask me, that's fine. Or if you can come to think of something that I should have covered, just get in touch again.
Great. Thank you. No, I think you covered everything, and your explanations were really comprehensive. So thank you so much for that.